This is.
Okay, well, I think we have everybody here, and it's 4 o'clock. So why don't we call this meeting to order? One of the first things I'd like to do is introduce Danielle Panner. She's sort of taken over, at least on an interim basis, for Ron. So, been drafted to keep us in line. Could we have a roll call, Danielle?
Vice Chair Lashford?
Here.
Commissioner Mason?
Here.
Commissioner Newell?
Here.
Commissioner Salverson?
Here.
Chair Beasley?
Here.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to lead the group in a Pledge of Allegiance. And I think for future meetings, we'll rotate this around if we could. So if we could start, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Do we have any outside people that have signed up for your call audience?
I have not seen any blue cards, so.
Okay. Then I think we may as well just move forward then and skip that. We have a staff liaison report.
Sure, I'll provide that. Mr. Chair, members of the commission, good afternoon. Dave Gephardt, Chief Financial Officer, for the record. Just wanted to highlight a couple items this afternoon. Our auditors will be here in 2 weeks to begin their audit procedures. They'll be testing our internal controls. They'll be on site. And so they'll be here probably 2 or 3 days doing internal control testing for the town. And then they'll be back. They'll return on the week of November 2nd to do finish up their fieldwork procedures. Again, that will be on site as well. And so we will be prepared for them on November 2nd. Additionally, we're looking at refunding several of our water bond or water debt obligations to obtain more favorable rates and to save the town some money. So we are engaging with WIFA in that, and also looking at doing a water revenue, our 2012 water revenue bond senior lien obligation. We're looking at refunding that as well. That would be actually an advance, what's considered an advance refunding to take advantage of the favorable interest rate environment. Last but not least, I just got word our July taxes, the transactions that took place in June look pretty good, other than hotels and restaurants were slightly down compared to last year. Retail was slightly higher. So we will obviously provide more updates on that as time goes on. We have our normal financial report, monthly financial report, that we'll be presenting later in this meeting, and that will cover end of year, or actually cover the period through June of 2020. So with that, be happy to entertain any questions that you may have.
Quick one, Dave. How much money are we talking about in terms of the refunds?
In terms of the refunding of the debt obligations?
Yes.
Sorry, let me take a look at that. It's about roughly total about $4.6 million. And with that refunding, we're not planning on extending the repayment terms at all. So we're basically going from roughly 3.5% money, you know. There's three separate issuances, but roughly going from 3.5% money down to about 1% money on that, and we should be able to save net. Of course, this is preliminary, but save about $350,000 net present value savings.
Great. Congratulations.
Excellent. Is this likely to be AA rated, David?
Yes. Yeah, we will we'll obtain a – we'll have to go through the ratings process again, but we expect to be confirmed at AA. We've just gone through an update – with Fitch Ratings, where they upgraded us from AA minus to AA. So we don't anticipate that there will be a change there.
Good. So, anybody else have any questions?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thank you.
Next on our agenda is the August 18 meeting minutes. Anybody have any comments on those? Do I hear a motion to approve?
Motion.
Second.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second. So. All those in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Okay. Any opposed? Okay, those minutes are approved as read then. David, I think you're on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. Actually, I'm going to turn the reins over to Wendy Gomez, our Finance and Budget Administrator, and she will be walking us through the fiscal year 2019-20 financial update through June 2020.
Thank you, Dave. I'm going to see if I can share my screen. I know you do have the PowerPoint, I believe, already, but let me see if I can bring it up here as well. Okay. Can everybody see that okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Commission members. I'm pleased to be presenting the financial update through June this afternoon, evening. I'm pleased to announce that performance-wise, we've really exceeded expectations in all of our funds, particularly in light of COVID. Some of those revenue impacts that we had feared, minimal compared to what we were anticipating. So we basically outperformed in all of our funds, and we'll walk through this evening the general fund, the highway fund, and the community center fund. But it's really all good news to report this evening, so. Jumping right in, these are unaudited, obviously, and so there will be adjustments, most definitely, before everything is said and done. So just a little disclaimer here, the revenues and expenditures are preliminary, they're unaudited and subject to change based upon adjusting entries. And we'll start off with the general fund on the revenue side. The local sales taxes, even with COVID going on, we did manage to outperform compared to budget. So that revenue category came in about $1.5 million over budget. We continue to see strong construction collections, remote seller, online. Obviously, with COVID, those are doing very well. And then we had just very strong collections in general in all of our categories through the first half of the fiscal year until all of this hit. And so all of that combined, as well as the impact to retail being much less than we'd anticipated from COVID. So we were able to come in above budget in that category. State shared revenues did fine as well. That overage, they came in just about $300,000 over budget. That was really due to the state share sales tax collections that came in over in that category. Charges for services, no change there really compared to May. I mean, obviously we'd stated that we knew we were going to end the fiscal year under budget just due to facility closures, aquatic center closures, parks and rec classes, and that kind of thing. In the licenses and permits, that category, we were anticipating to come in considerably over budget just because we had such strong permitting activity, both on the commercial side and the residential side, before COVID in the first half of the fiscal year. And quite frankly, on the residential side, at least, I know that those trends have continued to be strong, even through the second half of the fiscal year. So those came in about $400,000 over budget. And our single-family residential permits came in for fiscal year 1920 at 275. And then finally, our other revenue categories, all other, that's composed of things such as grants, RTA reimbursements that we get for our IGA with the RTA for transit services. Our interest income is in that category as well. That group of revenues in total is expected to come in over budget by about $600,000. That overage is primarily due to our investment income, our interest income that we saw for the fiscal year. So in total, our general fund revenues, we are expecting those, and they are subject to change, but we are expecting those at this point to come in about $2.3 million over budget. That's about 5.9%. We wanted to put together this chart. I love this chart because it kind of helps identify, we're splitting out some of the major sales tax categories that we collect in the general fund, just to kind of illustrate what we saw in terms of the COVID impacts in some of these categories. In March is where we've got kind of that separator line there where you can kind of gauge what the impacts look like after all of this hit. And that top line in the blue is our retail. That bump obviously is the holiday shopping that we always see that hits in January of each fiscal year. But really, you know, we had anticipated those to take a nosedive potentially, just not knowing what that might look like. But those have continued to stay strong. Obviously, our remote online collections are in that group of revenues, and those have held strong. In fact, they're doing very well. Construction sales tax continues to perform well also. You know, as I mentioned earlier, our permit revenues, our permit trends continue to be strong, and so that category is sailing along just fine. Utility sales tax, those usually don't grow a whole lot. I mean, those are looking pretty flat. There's probably, if I had to guess, maybe increased residential use but decreased commercial that we're getting from those collections. And then you see toward the bottom some of the categories that have been impacted by COVID. So there in the light blue is restaurant and bar. Obviously, that's dipped a bit since March. That's trending, I think, about 10% under budget. I'd have to double check those numbers, but really not as bad as we'd expected. And then the yellow is the bed tax. That is probably the category that we've seen the most impact to, obviously, just, you know, people not traveling and that sort of thing. So that is the category that's struggling the most right now for us. And then finally, all other, that's going to include just some of our smaller categories that you see there in the purple. On the general fund expenditure side, good news on that front as well with the personnel. Obviously, with some of the vacancies we have, we saw savings there with the temporary hiring freezes, and so we expect personnel to come in about $1.1 million under budget for that category. On our O&M side, departments continue, as they do every year, to watch their budgets and are prudent with their spending, and so we are expecting to see some O&M savings of about $700,000 in the general fund. And then our capital is expected to come in about $300,000 under budget. And that is simply tied to some grant funds that we had budgeted. And so you would see that offset on the revenue side as well. But that was, I believe, some grant-funded vehicles that we ended up not obtaining. And then the transfers, those were just the transfers out to our debt service fund to pay debt service that the general fund owes, as well as transfers to our CIP fund. So those transfers were completed as scheduled on budget. In total, for the general fund expenditures, we are expecting those to come in under budget by about $2.1 million. Again, that is subject to change as well, but at this point, that's about 5% below budget. In total, for the general fund, we are anticipating that we could add approximately $1.8 million to our fund balance. That would bring our estimated year-end fund balance to about $21.4 million. And just to note, that figure represents just over half of our budgeted expenditures. Council's current town policy is 25% of budgeted expenditures, so very positive there. Here is the chart for the general fund through June. You can see the revenues, even with COVID, up just a smidge, about 1% over last fiscal year. And then you see the budget amount there in blue. The expenditures, again, just a smidge higher than they were last fiscal year. Really, things pretty stable. And obviously, compared to budget, we are expecting them to come in under. Moving on to the highway fund, the revenues, we had mentioned this last month, but we did anticipate the HERF revenues to come in over budget. Those came in about $90,000 over budget, which totaled about $3.7 million. And that does include a one-time allocation that we had mentioned from the state that all cities and towns received. On the expenditure side, coming in just under budget by about $12,000, that's just a bit of personnel and O&M savings there. And we are expecting to utilize just over $50,000 of fund balance for fiscal year 19-20. Which is very positive because, as noted here, we had a budgeted use of a fund balance of about $337,000, so came in positive for the highway fund as well. That's going to bring our estimated year-end fund balance to just over $800,000 in that fund. Here's the chart. Pretty stable here, just as with the general fund. Revenues there roughly flat to last fiscal year. And then we've got on the expenditure side, flat to last fiscal year as well at about $4.1 million. So pretty stable, no big surprises there. Moving on to the community center fund, on the revenue side, our contracted revenues did come in just a bit over budget by about $1.3 million or about $40,000. And that was due to just a combination of things on the golf side, the revenues, member dues, trail and cart fees. On the town operating revenue side, as expected, those did come in considerably under budget just due to the fact that the facility was closed and is closed. So those are anticipated to come in about 35.5% below budget for the fiscal year, so just under $400,000. In the shortfall in that category. For the half-cent sales tax revenues, those did actually come in over budget. We are expecting those to come in over budget in the community center fund, and that's really just due to the fact that our remote collections, obviously we have that half-cent on that category, and that's really helped offset some of the other shortfalls that we're seeing, as well as the retail collections being much more positive than what we had anticipated. So that is the reason for the overage there. On the expenditures, the contracted expenditures, those did come in below budget by about 3% or $153,000. That was mainly due to personnel savings that our contractor had for the fiscal year. On the town side, the operating expenditures were also below budget by about just under 15%, about $150,000. And that was due to personnel savings from having the facility closed, as well as some reduced O&M savings for the same reason. Overall, in the community center fund, we're expecting to add to our fund balance by just over $400,000, which is great news for the fiscal year. That would bring us to an estimated year-end fund balance of just over $900,000 fund. So good news and good news in this fund as well. Here is the chart for the Community Center Fund through June. Things pretty stable here as well. You see the revenues. That's pretty impressive, actually, with the fact that the facility was closed, that some of those contracting revenues helped cover that shortfall that we were seeing on the town side. So revenues roughly flat, just under, compared to last fiscal year. And then expenditures flat as well compared to last fiscal year at about $6.2 million. And those are under budget compared to the current year budget. And with that, we'd be happy to take any questions you may have.
Anybody have any questions for Wendy?
I've got a quick question, Wendy. It's Kathy. First of all, congratulations. I think this is just absolutely terrific news given the environment that we're in with COVID. So that's just, this is great to see and hear. And my question was in regard to the CARES revenue. I assume that's not, we have not received that yet. And I'm wondering when that comes in, that will go into the general fund, and where will that hit? Like which category of revenue will that hit? When can we expect that?
We did see those come in August. Okay. So we wouldn't see them for fiscal year 1920, but we did receive those funds, and you okay. will see those in the August financials. We had booked them into, I'd have to look what category we have those in. I want to say it's probably the other intergovernmental category. I would actually have to check.
Okay.
I can follow up on that and let you know. But you will see those in August.
Okay, great.
Actually, it's federal grants is probably where we have it. But I'll do a double check and let you know.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I have a couple of questions.
Fire away, John.
First, let me join Kathy in saying this is quite a very good result. I think given all of the unexpected nature of things that we had to face earlier in the year, to see this actually come out like such a wonderful return, and really have to commend the staff and the leadership there for the work they've done to be able to produce this result. So it leads me just to a more of a theoretical question than an actual one, and that is that we have a policy, which of course I know we're working on, and that is a minimum reserve level for general fund expenditures, based on general fund expenditures of 25%. And now we're reflecting 50.1% based upon these results. So begs the question, this is not too technical, but is there a maximum reserve level before we have to start thinking about some actions? Does this trigger any actions within the town that they need to take a look at how much reserve they really have? That makes sense?
I can take that question, and Dave and Mary can chime in if they'd like to. There is no maximum, so there's no action that we need to take if we hit a certain level. Our financial policies do provide flexibility for us to utilize that excess above the 25% and put those proceeds towards either capital improvements or paying down the PSPRS unfunded liability. So that is an option with those excess. But there is no maximum where we are obligated to, bring it down or taking action in that regard.
So how about
Mr. Chairman, if I can also just very quickly jump in. One of the reasons why the policy was changed a couple of years ago was to specifically identify those excess reserves above 25% for the capital or the PSPRS liability. And what was envisioned is that those funds would simply be transferred to the CIP fund. So it would show up not as excess reserves, but dedicated specifically to capital so that we can, in some cases, bank money for large projects so we have cash available and we don't have to borrow money. And that certainly continues to be my recommendation. I think that's where we need to go this year. I think we need to, it needs to not show up as excess reserves because it's one-time dollars. It needs to go into the capital fund. Or it needs to be designated to, if the council wants to designate additional dollars to paying down the PSPRS liability, I think that certainly is an appropriate policy decision on their part. But when you start looking at something like, we have a 50% reserve, that really is not, I think, a fair assessment of what the town has always used its excess reserves to pay for capital. And I remember having a conversation with Stacy about this, and Wendy can attribute the, you know, can say the same thing. That's exactly how the town was paying for its capital, was as the money came in and there was more than the 25%. That is what was allocated for capital. That's what we use it for, and it can, needs to continue to be utilized in that way. And I think that the time is right to simply transfer it to capital so that it is reserved specifically for that purpose. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Can I make one comment as well? I think it's a bit confusing when we compare 51% fund balance to the 25%, because the 25% is your emergency fund, and that's set aside. The 50%, I mean, the rest of that, because there's categories of fund balance which may have restrictions on and other things where you can't use them for everything. So to compare, it looks like we're 30% over our emergency fund. I think we should maybe consider or think about anyway, excuse me, of looking at either assigned and unassigned and see what that percentage is. Going to move money into capital or whatever, it's going to come from one of those categories versus the other two categories of committed and non-spendable. So, you know, using your whole fund balance to compare to the contingency fund, I guess I think can be a bit confusing because of the fact, like I said, that not all that money, maybe it has restrictions on it, so you just can't use it for normal or capital, whatever, depending on what the restriction is.
Good.
Fine.
I think it's company, I mean, it's nice to know that we have not only past practice to dwell upon, but we've also got some practical applications to look at for this particular stuff. So I think I understand. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Did you have another question, John?
The second question that I had, a little more specific, and I noticed that under the fund balances report that we had a big increase in the, or relatively large increase in the benefit self-insurance deposits to the account, so fill up the fund balance by $1 million. Is that something in response to a specific need, or is that just trending for losses?
I can answer that question, or Mary can, whichever she prefers.
Me?
Go ahead, Wendy.
I'll take a stab at that. Chair Beasley, Commissioner Latchford, We had a very positive year of claims. Our claim trends are doing quite well. And so I think that's definitely what's contributing to that strong fund balance in the fund. We had a couple of challenging years with claims there for a little while, but have had some really good luck as of lately. And you can see that reflected in the positive results in the fund. So that's primarily what that's attributable to.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you very much for that. Sir, that answers my questions that I had. Again, good result. I'm very happy for the town, and I think they should be commended.
Just a quick question. Because we're in such a positive situation so far, are you considering hiring some of your vacancies, or are you still want to wait and see how FY21 goes before you make that decision?
Thank you, Ed. Commissioner Mason, that's a good question. We're still being a little bit cautious for just a little longer. I don't want to, jump in and, do something too quickly. But I would say that it's looking quite positive that we should be in a position to fill all of those positions. We've shuffled around some of the, like, as one position we've held vacant, another one comes, we decide we're going to fill this one instead of that one, or, that kind of thing, just for, based on needs of the different departments. But I would say that it looks positive, and we'll give it just a little bit more time. And and then maybe go ahead and open up positions with the target date to still start them towards the end of the year. Our departments have been very patient.
Thank you.
For the online sales component that's coming through, do we have a sense of what segments of the economy is that coming through? Is it home improvement, groceries, consumables? Do we have any idea whether or not that increase is going to continue moving forward? Or maybe it was a boom to a specific market because of COVID, like home improvement or something?
Commissioner Newell, if I had to guess, it's probably across the board in terms of the collections that we see from businesses in that category. Obviously, home goods, probably Amazon. I would say some of those, primarily like the retail side of things, are strong, but. But if I had to guess without diving into some of the business details, it's probably across the board in terms of the businesses that are in that category.
When the state gives you those numbers, do they detail it out by merchant, so you can see who's paying, how much Amazon is paying, how much eBay is paying, et cetera?
Yes, Commissioner Newell, they do.
I have a question with regard to the interest income line. Can I assume that large number comes about as a capital gain calculation as interest rates have dropped rather than the sale of securities that has generated cash?
Chair Beasley, I would say you're correct in that regard. Our mark-to-market was pretty positive for the fiscal year. That's kind of the lion's share of those revenues, but then the interest income as well finished strong. So it's kind of a combination of those categories, but the market value was very strong in finishing the fiscal year.
Sure, when interest rates go to zero. Okay. Anybody else have any questions for Wendy?
Yes, sir.
They let you off lightly.
Thank you.
Thank you. No, it's a great report. It's good to see that things have held up given a somewhat scary economic environment. And let's hope that as the gem show comes around and other things, we can open up some of the hotels and get the bed tax rolling a little bit for us. Thank you very much. David, I guess you're still on.
Yeah. Good evening, commissioners, once again. In your packet this evening included some draft financial policies for you based upon discussion that we had at the last BFC meeting. And I've received actually some good comments from several of you. Not all of those comments have necessarily been reflected in what you see this evening. So again, this is just a draft. This is just preliminary. But kind of what I wanted to do this evening was kind of go through the draft and the structure of the policies. I know that's kind of something that we discussed, or I discussed at the last BFC meeting. Discuss the structure, see whether that looks good, and then also kind of discuss some of the policies that are attached or that have been included as in the draft this evening. Again, what I tried to do is really reflect the current policies that we have, especially as it relates to Section A, in the current policies, reflect those in kind of a more organized manner and fashion. Also, I was able to locate the town's investment policy, and so I did actually include that in the packet as well, the current investment policy, as well as a draft investment policy. And again, Very few changes there, mostly just formatting of the policy, but kind of wanted to get your input and feedback in the draft this evening. Again, specific to the formatting, what's included in the draft, are there things that you would like to see that you don't see, or the things that you see that you don't necessarily want to see? Are there any enhancements that are recommended? And then after we have that discussion, maybe get into the discussion of moving on to Section B in the current policies, which deal with the town's revenue policies, specifically revenue diversification, fees and charges, use of one-time revenues, and unpredictable revenues. And so that is kind of what's on our plate this evening. And with that, any questions? Hopefully that's pretty clear before we kind of dive in.
Maybe to keep this under control, can we go through this section by section, page by page?
Certainly.
I'm looking for feedback from other members here, but I have gone through and have made notes on various topics on a page by page basis. I don't know if the other members have or not, and I think that's the kind of feedback you'd like to have.
Absolutely.
Let me ask just one quick question before we start, Mr. Chairman. In going through and looking at the draft of the new policies, were there any additions or deletions from the current policies? It seemed as mostly that it was, and it's been reflected in a very organized manner. But I'm thinking when it gets to the to the council, for example, I don't know how much the council uses the existing policies or how accustomed they are to going in and looking at it. I always felt like the existing policies sort of felt like somebody came in one day, let's put this one in. Somebody came in the next day, let's put this one in. There was no continuity. There's a lot of, and so when I'm looking at what you did, David, you attempted to put some linear thought into, you know, how to read these and what to look for, but it switches quite a bit from the old. So I'm wondering if it would be helpful when we eventually present this to the council to take the existing policies and at least reference where in the existing policies they are in the new policies, so that a council member who's sitting there and maybe hasn't seen these for a couple of years would be able to say, oh, okay, this is going to go into section such and such on the new policies, so I can go over there and see if it changed, or if there was no change. And it also would enable you to show to the council members that here's a new addition, and of course, you could just highlight here's new, or delete it. Proposed to be deleted. I guess the council would have to delete it, but anyway, and that way you could show any you might be proposing to delete. And I couldn't really find one, but anyway, if it's in there, I think there's one section on, I can't remember where it is, but didn't seem to make it into the new ones. That might give some help to being able to handle it when council. So, Mr. Chairman, that's probably not going to happen tonight, and I'm not suggesting it should, but if David's agreeable, that might be helpful for the council to get it in that kind of format.
Can I make a comment that kind of relates to what you're talking about? I'm wondering, maybe this is a question for Mary, do the other departments also have policies, and is this maybe something even bigger than just budgets and finance and the structure, which, by the way, I really like the change, and I like adding the structure, but should each department perhaps have a similar type of a layout with their policies? Is it something that you want to think about in a bigger picture than just finance?
Thank you, Commissioner Salverson. We absolutely have policies, departmental policies. The difference is that the town council is the fiduciary for the town of Oro Valley. So I'm the manager and I'm responsible for overseeing the management and operations, but they are the fiduciary. And so the financial policies really govern what their expectations are at the policy level. So they do not approve departmental policies except for personnel, which are in another section of the town ordinances. We do have some personnel rules and regulations that are in there, which frankly need updating as well, and we're working on that. But in terms of how they connect with the finances, they really are they're very separate. We're gonna sort of chunk this one piece at a time, and Dave has some great ideas on how to reorganize it, find it, because the thing is that not only do they show up in the budget book, but we'd reformat it so it didn't look so much like we just kind of read in a single document for the actual budget book. But we want to be able to put these on the town website as well, so people can find them and know what are those policies and what are those expectations. You know, the procedures, that kind of digs in a little bit deeper. So the town ordinances do have a bunch of things that are in there. And this is not at an ordinance level. It is kind of at a policy level. So, I'll dig in and think just a little bit harder on that. We have a whole structure on our administrative directives and, you know, what those are in terms of administration. This is a little bit different. We'll treat it as a departmental operation in that Dave has to be the one then to implement it. But again, it really has to do with the council as the fiduciary.
Okay. David, do you want to take us through this? Kind of
sure. Yeah. Let me just address Vice Chairman's question first, because I don't want that to just kind of hang out there. First off, I appreciate your comments, Vice Chairman Latchford. I agree with those. I think I actually made notes because I think that would be very helpful for the town council in terms of referencing, kind of providing for lack of a better word, a cross-reference type thing between both policies, because the structure and formatting is, as you can all see, is pretty significantly changed. But with that said, I think in terms of which policies in the current policies didn't quite make it into what's proposed in the draft this evening, one of them is the final paragraph under A1, where it talks about, and we discussed this last at the last BFC meeting, the town shall promote the understanding that its employees are its most valuable resource, et cetera. That didn't quite make it in there. I think that's more of town manager and I have kind of discussed this one. It may make it in into kind of a preliminary or a preliminary section to the policies, just as an overall goal or type of thing, not necessarily a policy per se. I think if it is a policy, it probably lends itself more to an HR policy than a finance policy, but it is kind of more of an overall type of goal or objective that kind of frames the policies that are included. And so it still may make its way in there, just not necessarily as a policy, but kind of as a preliminary discussion leading up to the policy document. Let me try to reference this better. The third paragraph, from the end of A1, where it talks about any fiscal year-end special revenue fund balance amounts and other special revenue funds of the town shall be maintained and preserved separately. I didn't necessarily think that that needed to be a separate policy or whatever. That's done as a matter of course with our funds. So the reason why we have those funds set up is because the special revenue fund specifically is because so that they can roll forward into future years and they're not commingled with other types of funds. And so so that happens just as a matter of course, just through a normal finance procedures. I didn't really see the need to have a policy that kind of called that out, just because that's just normal, that's standard as far as I'm concerned. But you all may have different opinion on that. That's fine. And then I believe again the paragraph just above that, the town shall work to minimize the financial burden on its taxpayers by routinely evaluating both its administrative and direct service delivery systems in terms of, again, that one, and I don't know that you'll find that policy. I'm fine with including that someplace. I'm not sure that that's the right spot for it, I guess. And I think that's why it's not included as the, in the policies that are before you this evening. As we continue to develop the document, that may find its way back into the policies at some point. But really, those are, as I worked through this, I tried to do it really systematically and methodically. I believe those are the three primary. Of course, the cash management investment policy, that's been really what I did there was kind of, you know, really modify under A.3, really modify that for including the investment policy for the town, really kind of beefing it up, which kind of made this A.3 not necessary, because I think there's probably some duplication or just some things that are not really necessary after I included the enhancements to the investment policy. And then looking at asset inventory, let me scan through this quickly. I think I've tried to include pretty much everything in A.4. Maybe that final paragraph, the town will maintain capital assets and infrastructure at a sufficient level. I'm not sure if that one made it in or not. I'd have to review the draft again. Maybe we should just get into the draft document, and maybe some of these things will kind of resolve themselves. But
yeah, David, I think it's going to be. I guess it's going to be the council that makes the decision about what changes are accepted or not accepted. Is that correct?
Yes.
So I guess what I'm thinking is that it's okay to recommend to them deletions or removal from the policies, but they have to know it's happening. So I'm just suggesting, you know, how you might have a document that's got a red line through it that says, you know, we're proposing to take this out. So they need to see that. That's whether or not they accept it or not. I don't know. They don't always accept everything that comes out of the commission. So I think it's worthy of bringing it forward and having the discussion, but we probably need to send it forward and say, you know, the commission and staff are recommending deletion. That's about it. That's all I was saying.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. So delete away.
Okay, so diving in this evening, kind of that first section where it talks about the town of World Valley has an important responsibility to its residents. Again, you may see enhancements to this. There may be other paragraphs that are included here in future iterations, but basically everything that you see there in that opening paragraph is pretty much verbatim to what we have in our current policies. I have kind of right beneath that, you see table of contents, but nothing there. That will get filled in later. The idea here is that as the policies become developed, that we have a, you know, because we're going to have different sections and so forth, that we have a table of contents that allows the user to easily reference back and forth to the primary sections of, the items, the policies that they're looking for, just to provide organization and ease of use of the policy document. So it's not something that, you know, just goes on a shelf, but it is readily available and usable by any user, and to find specific policies of items that they're looking for. Diving into the budget process, that's policy 1-1, and the main changes here kind of, and you see the structure again, the purpose, the scope, the definitions, and then the policies themselves beneath that. The definitions there are, you know, those are some items that I felt like were hopefully useful just to explain or to provide common understanding for the policies that follow. There may be other definitions as I read through it and take, you know, take other cracks at this. I know Commissioner Mason, you sent me several definitions that I thought, a number of definitions for this section that I thought were actually excellent. And so I have not had the time really to really get in and include some of those items, but hopefully I've got a lot of the basics covered here as it relates to the budget policy. Policy 1.0, dealing with the operating capital budget. Really what we're trying to establish here is that the overall townwide budget is established of two primary components, an operating budget and a capital budget. But to know what those components are, we kind of have some definitional, some clarifiers there as to what is considered capital or not. Certainly there's some tie-in to even the final policy in your draft this evening, which deals with capital expenditures and improvements, policy 1.1-5. But really trying to establish that those two primary components comprise the overall townwide budget. 2.0 deals with budget deadlines. And those are really, again, trying to establish timeframes for completion of the budget, and that includes the tentative budget and the final adoption of the budget. Policy 3.0 really deals with what a balanced budget is, the town's budget will be balanced, and how we're going to do that. We're going to avoid kind of the tricks that some governments or jurisdictions use in terms of utilizing either loans or one-time revenue sources or deferrals, which is a favorite of our state government, honestly, in terms of trying to balance the budget. Contingency is dealt with in 4.0, obviously, that really got what we're trying to do here is just delineate what the utilization of contingency ought to be for, how it's used, the restrictions on it, etc. The current funding basis is dealt with in policy 5.0. Again, really trying to deal with on this one specifically, I think the key here is striving to achieve a structurally balanced budget. So I think that's really, really the key, you know, not producing a budget where we're continually spending more than we bring in. Obviously that lends itself towards challenges in the future if you do that too often for too long. And then 6.0, the budget development section really again, kind of talking about utilizing multi-year forecasts, doing some program and performance-based budgeting, incorporating best available estimates of revenue and expenditures. These are things that we have done and we want to continue to do. 7.0 deals with budget management. That really is an authority section. It tasks the town council with the ultimate authority, but then delegating that authority to the town manager for operation purposes, and the town manager may further delegate for the daily operation, which she does routinely for each department head. Policy 8.0 deals with the level of budget adoption. Here, we're really talking about budget, the legal level of budget authority, and so this one is really an accountability and control piece, and also a communication piece. This level of budget adoption, again, it's coming really straight from our current policies in terms of how we report, how we budget things by category, by fund, et cetera. And then 9.0 deals with appropriations, and this is kind of a standard one. Appropriations lapsing at fiscal year end is just a best practice. Basically, what this means is that we're not going to carry over budget authority from one year to the next as a matter of course. Everything that when we're talking about carryovers and things, those things need to be rebudgeted in the new fiscal year. We're not going to automatically say that since things have been approved and adopted and so forth in one year that those are, not everything was spent, that we're going to carry that over into the new fiscal year. Those appropriations will lapse and need to be rebudgeted in the new fiscal year. And that, of course, have the new approval for that year from the town council. So that, I know that's very kind of quick and dirty, but are there any questions? And again, I hope that I kind of dealt with the issue that Vice Chair Latchford had as to, a lot of these items are currently in the town's financial policies. I venture to say almost all of them are. They're just presented a little bit differently and hopefully in a little more structured format.
I just have one thing on back in 2.0. You have the town manager or designee. I assume the town manager is a designee, so we probably don't need more designee there. And then is your date wrong? You have July 31st. I would assume that should be either July 1st or June 30th.
Yeah, Commissioner Mason, members of the commission, that date is actually correct. We are allowed by Arizona revised statutes to actually, for final adoption, to actually go into July. And if you'll recall, actually this past budget season, which we just got through, the town council actually didn't adopt the budget until, I believe it was July 15th. We had the tentative budget approved prior to July 1st. But the final adoption actually happened in the middle of July. So I'm hoping in the future that those dates really become superfluous. I would be fine with moving them up, quite honestly. But then we had an issue like we did with COVID this year, where it was during this past budget season, where everything was just kind of thrown up in flux. This does allow kind of maximum flexibility for the town to work towards final adoption. Certainly the tentative needs to be approved, adopted prior to June 30th, or prior to July 1st, I should say, by June 30th.
But in your policy, do you really want July 31st as opposed to June 30th?
Mr. Chair, members of the board, I'm willing to flex on this one. To me, this one is this allows kind of maximum flexibility for the town. If we would have had June 30th in the current policies and we would have done things exactly the same this past budget season, we would not have been in compliance with the policy. But with that said, I think there's a reasonable explanation for that. And just because we wouldn't have been in compliance with the policy doesn't mean we wouldn't have been in compliance with Arizona revised statute. So you know, I'm open to feedback and willing to flex on that.
So according to the law, then, once the new fiscal year starts 1 July, are you under the tentative budget at that point, or is that the rule then?
Yeah, Commissioner Mason, members of the commission, that's absolutely correct. That's the tentative budget kind of sets that overall maximum for spending for the town. And so we are under the tentative until the final budget, which can be reduced between tentative and final adoption. And we're under the tentative until that happens.
Makes sense. I have just a couple of little things. The first is in the very top where you say budget process, would it make sense to add the word annual to that? To kind of differentiate that from the section 1.2, which is more, you know, including more than 1 year.
Okay. Yes.
Just a comment.
I like that suggestion.
Okay. And then under definitions, I'm wondering if you want to add fiscal year and then add in that section that our fiscal year starts July 1st and you know, July 1 and ends June 30th. And then my last comment was under, where did it go? Somewhere, and I've lost it here. Oh, 2.0, where you say budget deadlines, maybe calling that budget timelines. And then if there may be other, I feel like there was another chart somewhere along the line that we saw once upon a time that had other kind of timelines for how, when this all started. You probably don't want to go into detail because this is a policy, but that word as opposed to a deadline.
Okay.
And that's all.
Good comments. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
David, I have a couple. Under the purpose, do we want to say transparent town or transparent system or transparent procedures, something along that line? Transparent town is, I don't know, doesn't strike me right. Yeah. Under balanced budget.
How about transparency? How about just the word transparency?
That works for me too. Yeah. I just don't see where town fits in.
Okay.
Under balanced budget. A financial plan in which all resources are equal to all disbursements.
Expenditures
works also, but requirements, I'm not certain that fits.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, the reason why I use requirements is because requirements are inclusive of expenditures and disbursements. Which expenditures and disbursements, as we all know, are outflows of resources. Requirements, when we're talking about requirements, that can be inclusive of something like contingency, which contingency isn't necessarily an outflow of, it's not a disbursement, it's not an expenditure, mm-hmm. but it is a budget category. And so requirements is kind of used specifically there to include disbursements, expenditures, and contingency, and even ending reservations of ending fund balance if we wanted to get to that level. So I would prefer to kind of keep as is. I know it's kind of maybe a different type of term, but that is, I believe, as far as I'm aware, that is kind of the correct term or whatever to utilize for that purpose.
Just wanted to make sure it was thought out.
Yeah, no, good explanation. Thank you for the explanation. I forgot that contingencies have to be in there.
Yeah.
Okay. And the next one, the budget, over a set period of time, generally one fiscal year.
Okay. Got it.
And 6.0, the town will use strategic multi-year fiscal planning. Is strategic as opposed to the town will use multi-year fiscal planning?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the question is strategic necessary? I think the purpose, maybe it's just inferred, the purpose of something being strategic is that it that there is a long-term goal or plan. I think my opinion, the reason why it's in there is just to hopefully to clarify that this is not just a multi-year fiscal plan, but there's some sort of purpose or thought out goal or strategy behind the plan. But if you think that is redundant, then I'm open to that, I guess, as well. Is that what the question is, Chairman?
Yeah, the question is the word strategic.
Is there another term that you would recommend, or do you think it just ought to be deleted?
My general recommendation would be to delete it, but I'm listening to other people.
Okay. Thoughts on the word strategic, commissioners?
I mean, I understand your comment, Dave. It's whatever you guys think. I mean, either way is fine.
I don't think anybody's going to fight over it. So.
Okay.
You know, one other thing, and I don't know if it would fall into that section, but I feel like it's missing, is maybe addressing, headcount, because isn't that part of the process? I don't know where you put it in there. Budget development is what I'm thinking, but that drives a lot in terms of your total dollars. So I feel like it should be included somewhere, as that's, as looking at that is a big part of the decision process with your budgeting.
Okay. And I know we do include full-time equivalents, et cetera, in our budget documents, but so that's a good comment. I'll try to think about that one as to where the best place for that one to land is.
Okay.
If you look at 8.0, we've got some references in there to personnel, accountability for different controls. Does that get at what you're trying to get to, Kathy?
Maybe a little bit. I'm thinking in terms of even overall, you're looking at what your full-time FTE levels are, probably overall and by department, right? I would think that is a part of this process. I remember right. talking about it a lot in terms of, the police force when we were doing the budget last year was a big part of the discussion. So I was thinking it would fall under 6.0, but it doesn't matter. I think it needs to be included somewhere.
Good comment. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anybody have any other comments in the first section here?
I think, Mr. Chairman, the only thing I would add to this, David, is It seems like the budget process is pretty robust within the organization, at least from what I can see, and I know it is. Is there anything that we should consider in addition to what's already there, or do you think this is comprehensive enough? I don't have any specifics, but I'm wondering if you do.
You know, that's a good question, Vice Chairman Latchford, members of the commission. I think as I've been even thinking about it now, because I always have these thoughts just kind of pop in my head. So one of the standards that the town has always strived to achieve is to apply for the GFOA budget award. And that might be something that we may want to include here. I mean, I don't think we have it in our current policies, not so far as I can tell. But that may be something that we include in the policies just as a matter of course, because it would be recognizing a best practice, you know, submitting our budget to GFOA, allowing them to review our budget document for completeness and all the different criteria that they use for scoring to see whether it qualifies for their budget, their Distinguished Budget Award.
That's on the last page of your current policy.
Is it in the last page?
Yeah.
Does it have a category called best practice?
Yep, there it is. You're right. Thank you, Commissioner Mason. That's where it is. It's under the financial reporting policies.
Makes sense.
So let me see. Did I have a... Yeah, and I don't think I've gotten to financial reporting yet. So I guess the question is, does it belong? Because we will have a financial reporting policy. Obviously, we haven't gotten there in terms of reviewing it through this process. We would have eventually. But I guess the question is, does it belong here in the budget process, or does it belong in the financial reporting policy that's yet to be developed?
What about just having a category called best practices?
Okay.
And throw the budget, the GFOA activities, and, you know, just in general, the objective of the town to have policies and practices and management being what would be anticipated for an organization such as that.
I think that's a good suggestion. I like that recommendation. It emphasizes what our duties and responsibilities are, and this really highlights it.
Okay, I like that.
Long-range planning.
Okay. There are no other comments. We'll dive into 1-2, long-range planning. So this one, again, really tightly corresponds with our current policy 8.2. Again, just kind of formatting it a little bit differently, but basically the intent here is just to establish that we're not going to be just doing singular budget processes and just looking at the budget year over year. We will actually do a five-year financial forecast. And really what we're looking at specifically here is our operating budget and trying to, and maybe that needs to be to be clarified or called out a little bit more clearly, but really what we're trying to do is look at our operating budget, do a five-year forecast and say, okay, you know, we're going to have a one-year plan, which is our annual budget, and have the council adopt that, but we're also going to do a five-year plan to see how the future looks and see whether there are any, see how that drives decision making and kind of take a strategic approach to this. So any comments or questions, feedback on the long range planning? Are there any additions that need to be made or definitions, et cetera?
Well, you're making a comment in here of a minimum 5-year financial forecast. When would a longer term plan be generated or be required? Is that worth any discussion at all in this policy?
I think from my professional opinion and standpoint, and I've had this discussion with the town manager and internally, anytime you go out further than 5 years, I mean, 5 years is a long time. A lot can change within 5 years. Shoot, a lot can change within 1 year, as we've seen with COVID. So I think anytime you go out further than 5 years, I think those out years become a little less meaningful. So it's kind of one of those things as to what is the right, and I'm open to the discussion, certainly. What is the right time frame? At what point does the juice, is the juice not worth the squeeze, so to speak, in terms of the time and effort put forth in preparing the plan? 5 years is a long time. I mean, I know that that's certainly a challenge for us internally just to do that 5-year plan. But I think it is helpful, obviously, to look out into the future, try to project out. But so much of what we do here in the town is subject to, because we are so primarily dependent upon sales taxes, is really dependent upon and emergently dependent upon the economy. And so I think that can become a challenge when you're trying to extend out further than 5 years. What are those assumptions? What are those estimates that you're basing the out years on, whether it's year 6, 7, 8, 9, whatever that is? So again, I'm welcome to the discussion, welcome to have the discussion. I'm not sure, 5 years seems to be a kind of a good, time frame for me. To go shorter than that, it might be a little bit too short. If we went down to 3 or 4, to go longer than that, it becomes a challenge in those out years again. But that's just me kind of thinking it through as I've thought it through even prior to this meeting.
Mr. Chairman, just briefly, I'll weigh in just briefly. I think what we find, what we need to ask ourselves is what's really the value, because by the time you get to year 5, the projections are simply straight projections. We're not predicting anything. It's just like, okay, what are we, we're just going to do a straight, projection on cost of it doesn't end up really adding any value to it, because we can't project revenues 5 years in advance. We're just going to do it based on a trend. So, I think that if we're talking about value added, I don't know that it really gives us any better information, even with the tools that we have. I think 5 is certainly important. I agree. 5 is very important. After that, it's kind of a crapshoot in a way.
Mr. Chairman, I could concur with the comments from David and Mary. I once had an accounting professor who said, if you do a forecast, the only way you know it's really valid is if you go back and see how it did. And I think 10 years would be, in this day and age, probably a little hit and miss. I don't know. You could spend a lot of time going back and see how you did perform, but then you'd have to come up with the reasons. Well, why did I? Why did we achieve it? Why didn't we achieve it? Man, it can get pretty intensive with resources I think 5 years is what's been historically done from a organizational standpoint. They're accustomed to it. So I guess my point is I take the ball and run. So
well, if we're going to lock in on a 5 year, do we need to say a minimum 5 year forecast?
Yeah, I would think minimum is a little redundant.
I agree. I think just leave it at 5 year. That's what you've been doing, correct, David?
Yes.
Yeah, I think I would just leave it at that. And if there was a reason that you felt you needed to either extend or reduce that, then you would make that update the next year when you're reviewing the policy.
Right.
Right.
Makes sense.
If you look at the wording, if you look at your next section of fiscal monitoring 1.3, and you look at 2.0 there, that wording in 2.0 there probably could be either copied over here, or at least that last sentence, the forecast shall examine critical issues. You could add that to this paragraph in 1-2.
I like that. Yep.
Maybe long range planning should be combined with fiscal monitoring.
Well, I think what you want long range planning to do is you want to make sure that certain issues that you're aware of that are going to happen in the next several years kind of don't fall off your vision.
Right.
Because sometimes what happens if you just do a year and then the next year and the next year, there are things that you think of when you're, you know, throughout the year. And if you don't have that documented somewhere, there's so many pieces that go into these forecasts. You know, it's just sort of a way to make sure that you're capturing and remembering all of these issues that you know are going to happen. So to me, that's kind of the purpose, mm-hmm. right? It makes the next year, makes the next year easy when you've got something to start with and you've already got some of those assumptions already documented and so forth. I like the idea of adding that last sentence.
Do you want to reference your strategic plan or general plan in this section as well, too?
That's a good idea, too. Yeah.
Are you suggesting, for instance, that maybe this should be long-range strategic planning?
That's a catchy phrase. Yeah, I mean, it's obviously you have your general plan, your strategic plans, and you're kind of basing your budget on that. So, I mean, if you want to reference that in here, that's fine. If not,
maybe it's just strategic plan.
Plans are kind of looking out long range, and you can kind of tie this if you can, at least record.
I think that could be incorporated in the purpose. It's more of a description, you know, to establish policy for long-range forecasting and planning based upon, you know what I mean? Like kind of describe based upon policies established by the council, general plan, you know, and other you know. So I can work with Dave on an update to the purpose statement.
That works, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
I do like the section 2.0 of the fiscal monitoring, and it should probably be moved over into this long-range planning category.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree, because we don't do, that's not a fiscal monitoring. I think of that as more as reporting, yeah. Right? So I like that. I like kind of moving everything in there right above it. I think that's what you're doing. Yeah.
Yep.
And you don't really do any other, you do your 5-year plan, but you don't ever go back and, you know, evaluate actuals to the plan or anything like that, right? It's more of just a tool, right?
Yeah. And I agree. As I read through it, it's funny, the things that jump out, but I think we're mm-hmm. all kind of there heading that direction, that really the five-year forecast under the fiscal monitoring. It better belongs under the long-range planning because it's not really a monitoring tool. It's more of a planning, long-range planning type of tool. And we don't need redundancy in the policies. So if we take that 2.0 and take that verbiage and throw it into 1.0 under long-range planning, then that will shorten up the fiscal monitoring section a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I think you should think about replacing the term long-range with strategic. So just cogitate about it.
Okay. Any other comments with long-range planning? All right, fiscal monitoring. So this one, just kind of roll through that quickly, talks about 1.0 financial status and performance reports. We're talking about monthly reports, comparing revenues and expenditures to current budget, obviously, and doing some projections and forecasting. Dollar amounts and percentages, highlighting those, et cetera, which are things that we already do, included in even tonight's presentation by Wendy. Status reports on capital projects. This one, we're talking about quarterly status reports, which is what we provide to the town council. So again, kind of a quarterly update on major capital projects, which when we're talking, you know, we'll discuss in the next policy as well, but the capital project policy. But when we're talking about capital projects, these are projects where there's a lot of money outflows going out the door, a lot of high visibility projects, et cetera. So we just want to make sure that the council is aware of where we stand on those major projects and where the money's going and how we're tracking on those. Compliance with financial policy statements. Again, this is really dealing with the review of the same type of, really kind of the same type of thing that we're doing this evening, the review of the financial policies, how, you know, we're going to review them annually, update or revise as necessary, that there can be exceptions to the policies, but if there are, they'll be explained, etc. So any questions, comments, feedback on this fiscal monitoring section 1-3.
I'll hit you with one. Wendy, I really appreciated the actual to actual report when you had the graphs. I'd like to see more actual to actual rather than just actual to budget on the financial status and performance report. It gives me a better handle as to what happened before, what's happening now, and also put that in perspective with the current budget situation. That's how I look at financials.
Thank you, Chair Beasley, for that feedback. Duly noted.
How about adding something about the CAFR in this section?
Yeah.
Because that is a responsibility, right?
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't know that...
Is it monitoring, though? Maybe it's not monitoring.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm cracking mentally, is I'm not sure that it's monitoring because it's coming after the fact. When we prepare the CAFR, there's not really anything that we can do with that information. It is what it is at that point in time. It's not a monitoring mechanism that we're utilizing throughout the year.
So to Kathy's point there, just for a moment, CAFR audit.
Sorry.
Do we have audit policies coming up here, or I don't recall there being a section regarding audit. I think we make a statement that we need to do it, but I don't think we have a section on it. Do we, David? Or
Commissioner, Vice Chair Latchford, members of commission, let me read through quickly, scan through our current policy. I don't know if that's what your question is. We will have a reporting policy that will deal with the CAFR, et cetera. So we just haven't gotten there yet, obviously. There's a financial reporting policy in the current policies, which is the town policies. It's signified under letter D, where we talk about the CAFR applying for the GFOA certificate of achievement for excellence in financial reporting, et cetera. So, we just haven't gotten there yet. We will get there.
Or another option would be to combine it and say fiscal monitoring and reporting.
Okay.
Because if you have a separate reporting section, these all are reports. Just a thought.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll see if we can massage that and see if that makes sense.
So just to refresh my, this is an educational point for me. CAFA is a legal responsibility that the town must complete.
The town must complete annual financial statements. The CAFR kind of is annual financial statements on steroids, essentially, where it's got a statistical section. And then, you know, I think we, even with our annual financial statements, we would need an MD&A, but it's got a letter of transmittal. You know, there's just other components and pieces that are included in the CAFR that, that are not necessarily required with just annual financial statements produced by the audited financial statements produced by the town. So it is best practice. So, I mean, that's another thing that we could do is include it in that best practices section that's been proposed by Chair Beasley, because the CAFR we would apply for. As we have, again, it's something that we do as a matter of course, apply for the GFOA Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting, submit our CAFR to GFOA and let them grade and score that. So to see whether it meets best practices and criteria that they have for it. So, that's something that we could consider as well.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Any other pieces in fiscal monitoring that we're missing? Additions, holes, things that we're missing?
Do you provide anything to the departments, Wendy? Do the departments get any reporting so that they know how they're doing?
Chair, Commissioner Silverson, they currently do not. It's kind of on them to monitor their budget in terms of going into our financial system and running their reports regularly and watching their budget amounts. That's kind of just on them as their responsibility right now.
Okay. So there's nothing, in terms of oversight, there's not. I think you talked about here on one of these, you outline remedial actions necessary, but in terms of oversight, that's kind of all that really is done. If there's a department that's overrunning, you'd need to have some kind of communication with them.
Well, we're certainly watching those as we're preparing the monthly financials. I mean, we're running those numbers by departments. Mm-hmm. Looking at those line items to see if anything kind of jumps out at us, watching how departments are trending in terms of their budget spend. So we're certainly keeping an eye on that. But in terms of watching it to greater detail like that, that is the department's responsibility.
Okay, and you don't give them the data, they do it themselves. Okay.
That's correct.
Okay.
Where does debt rating objectives or desires of the town in terms of rating levels fit fiscal monitoring?
That's a good question, Chair Beasley. I mean with these policies, there are always different places that you can put things in. I think from my perspective, I think I would, we are going to have a debt policy. We currently have a debt policy. There, you know, again, it's one of those that we have not gotten to yet, but that would be a place to include that, you know, as a target or whatnot. There's a lot that goes into debt ratings, certainly. The budget does. You know, the fiscal monitoring certainly plays into it. Forecasts, that we, you know, the policy we just dealt with the five-year forecast, that certainly plays into it. So there's a whole lot that plays into a debt rating. The question is, I think, as I understand it, where you're going, does it belong here, or does it belong in the debt policy, or does it belong someplace else altogether in terms of a best practice or whatnot? And
right.
I think my inclination right now would be to deal with it in the debt policy if we were going to try to set a target for debt rating.
Okay. It belongs somewhere. I just don't know where. Anybody have anything else for David on this? Shall we charge forward?
All right.
I would.
Go into 1-4, which is Chair Beasley's favorite policy, investments.
Yeah, I sent you a few little things on that.
Yeah. Which I appreciate. Thank you. No, they were very helpful. So this is a proposed investment policy. There are a couple definitions there. Certainly I could beef that up a little bit, probably needs to be beefed up a little bit. But as I looked at our current town policy for investments, we had credit risk and interest rate risk, and they are included in the policy even before you this evening. They're included in there, but they were included as definitions and then as statements or policy after that. What I really tried to do is take the definitional components out and put it in the definitions section where it belongs, so that the policy for those dealing with those risks is strictly policy. Again, really tried to closely mirror what our current policy is, but Chair Beasley also sent me a policy from Overland Park, Kansas, and some other policies as well, which were helpful, trying to see whether we had holes in our current policy or not. So anyways, I'll kind of roll through. Policy one deals with the objective, with really highlighting safety, liquidity, and return. And those are the kind of the priorities, from utmost to the least. And so safety would be the highest priority, liquidity would kind of be that middle priority, and return would be the lowest priority. Not that return is a low priority, but just the lowest of those three. And then credit risk and interest rate risk policies, those are policies that that are best practices by GFOA. I wanted to include those. They are, again, part of our current investment policies. So good things there. Good stuff with there. I just wanted to kind of structure it a little bit better in terms of how we dealt with those in the policy. 2.0 deals with delegation of authority for the investment program. Who is responsible for the investments of the town, essentially. 3.0 deals with the standard of prudence for our investments. and what that standard is, what that looks like. 4.0, again, kind of along the same lines, but it deals with ethics and conflict of interest, specifically that that our decisions are need to be impartial, that they we you know that employees who are involved in the investments of the town shouldn't have material interests in the financial institutions in which they conduct business. So really kind of dealing with conflict of interest and that any conflicts need to be disclosed so that there's ethical behavior going on. 5.0 deals with safekeeping and custody. And this is really dealing with trying to lower the risk of fraud or embezzlement of the town's investments, really making sure that that there's proper internal controls, that the financial institution is independent of the town, that we're only utilizing authorized financial institutions, and that there's annual review going on by the investment officer.
David, who is the investment officer?
That would be myself, the chief financial officer, although I'm fine with upgrading that to the town manager. So, but I think typically that would
I'm
be...
not.
Typically, that's the chief financial officer for the town.
So you probably want to change that to title to yourself.
Certainly I can do that.
Didn't know if we got you an investment officer on staff yet.
Yeah, I mean, it, yeah, so, right. Yeah, and I think that's a good point. So I think just clarification, if we're talking about, and maybe I need to review this and clean it up a little bit, but if we're talking about investment officer, we want to make sure that we're clear as to whether that is a town employee or a consultant or a third party that the town is utilizing to invest on behalf of the town.
Correct.
Yeah, that's a good point, Vice Chair Latchford. I'll definitely review that. 6.0 deals with the types of investments that the town can invest in. So a lot of detail there. Really what we're trying to do, again, is kind of comply with ARS. Not trying to, that is really called out here throughout that policy. You see it multiple times. That policy, and then 7.0, dealing with the investment parameters as well. Dealing with maturities, diversification, competitive procurement process, or a use of cooperative contract. That's really kind of a procurement policy, but I think it's important to have a competitive process that's utilized when you're talking about town investments so that the town is achieving is getting the best deal for its investments, that it's not being gouged by investment advisors. So with that, questions, comments, feedback on 1-4. Kind of a high level overview there, but there's a lot to this policy.
Yeah, I'd like to make a few comments.
Fire away.
I think this should be a banking and investment policy.
Okay.
Because for you, as an example, to do repurchase agreements, simplified sweep arrangements, those kinds of things, you've got banks involved. So a section in here should include banking RFP selection, frequency, that kind of stuff. But certainly I would start out on a broader basis saying banking and investment policy. Yeah. Which means that when you're looking at credit risk under definitions, the risk of loss or failure of the security or backer, you might want to say backer and or banks. And interest rate risk goes two ways, up and down. So the value of securities will fall or rise due to changes in market rates.
Okay.
Like obviously, that. The greater risk is on the downside.
Right.
Kind of work. When we get to 4.0 on ethics and conflict of interest, I would basically change the word should in all of these cases to will.
Okay. I like that.
It makes it far more affirmative as to what's necessary to be able to handle it. And 5.3, technically, DVP is securities are deposited into an eligible financial institution simultaneously with the release of funds. Nobody's going to give you your securities first and then wait for you to give them cash. That all goes simultaneously linked to your bank.
Okay, got it.
When we start talking about investment types, qualified banks and savings and loan institutions should be FDIC guaranteed. Repos have a maximum maturity of 180 days. And those repos are typically utilizing a bank, using a sweep program. I assume that's what you're doing right now.
Is FDIC insured to the organization or to the security? It's to the organization.
It's to the organization.
Yeah.
If you buy a CD or a time deposit from a bank, it's an FDIC guarantee up to a certain limit.
Yeah.
That's why later on in here we have a collateralization requirement of 102% because FDIC limits are $250,000 per account. So the only way that you can get yourself fully covered is to have adequate collateral on the deposit.
So who would put up the collateral?
Whatever institution that is issuing you a CD or a repurchase agreement has to come up with the collateral. And 102% in theory covers the interest rate volatility for the time frame that you're holding that security.
Okay, so do all of our institutions that we currently have securities with meet that test? We would get into the policy.
Yes. Vice Chair Latchford, members of the commission, yes, they do. Yeah, I mean, I guess the question I have, Chair Beasley, is when you talk about FDIC, so are you recommending that I change the verbiage to include CDs as being FDIC insured, or?
Yes.
Okay.
Because your 102% collateral
would
technically only start covering after the FDIC coverage.
Got it. Yes. Okay. I just wanted to make sure I was clear there. That's what I thought, but I just wanted to.
An additional collateral coverage, basically.
Right.
And keeps the U.S. government in the middle of it.
Right.
So I guess the only reason I bring it up, and I don't want to beat it to death, but don't we have a note to the financial statements in the audit that says that we have not met that test, that we have significant amounts of investments above and beyond FDIC insurance?
Vice Chair Latchford, that's a standard note disclosure that needs to be made in the notes to the financial statements and the cash footnotes, specifically amounts above the FDIC insurance level we need to be fully collateralized by. And I believe I'd have to go and hunt for it, but I believe, because usually this is the case, in my experience it's the case, I believe that's a requirement in Arizona revised statutes that requires local governments to be fully collateralized on their investments or their amounts in financial institutions above and beyond, I should say, fully collateralized on their amounts in financial institutions above and beyond FDIC insurance. So that's an ARS. I'd have to hunt down exactly where that's at, but I'm 99.99% positive that exists someplace.
Okay, all right. I want to make sure we're not setting up a policy that's in conflict already. So,
what we can always do is have a policy that's more restrictive than the state, but not less.
Right.
Yeah. So that's what we need to be cautious about. And that leads me to these three bullets in the middle of this page, which are bonds or other indebtedness within the state of any county, city, school district, blah, 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 blah. We need to be really careful about that, because while state statute may permit you to buy that stuff, there's no restrictions in there about the debt rating.
Okay.
So you're very cautious everywhere else about the quality of the security you're buying, except for these three bullets. So if I had to suggest something, and it's basically going to exclude buying any of this stuff, is demand a AAA rating.
Okay.
You don't need to own any of this stuff. You really don't.
Right.
This is just permitted by state statute.
Right.
And it accommodates the politics of municipalities, school districts, et cetera, within the state. So just make it more restrictive and say you need a AAA rating or you're not interested in it. That would be my recommendation.
Okay.
The next bullet here on money market mutual funds. Unless it's considered a government security money market fund, it has to be marked to market valued, which means that you could actually have a money market fund that is worth less than $1 per share. So I would restrict money market mutual funds to U.S. government securities only.
Okay.
And the way you want to do that is to reference that the money market mutual fund must always be priced at $1 per share. And that eliminates any flexibility of other types of securities that might go in there. It also restricts what your returns are, obviously. But you know, it's that old risk-reward trade-off. On the very last bullet there, and this can be a controversial thing, you might want to cogitate about making sure that you don't own a CD or a time deposit that's callable. Because you know what happens when interest rates go down, they get called away. So you can solve that problem very, very easily by just simply saying callable securities are not permitted.
Okay.
Getting back into the banking, I think there's a section in there that you really need to have in terms of the bank service collection frequency that you might do a banking services RFP, references an RFP to do the selection. Is there an integral part to your investment program? The performance monitoring in here is either non-existent or very weak. Taking a look at your attachment on the performance standards, part of your quarterly reporting should be against benchmarks. And your benchmarks are really dictated based on the nature of the securities that you own, including the duration of your portfolio.
What's that?
Also own some securities that are marginally rated. So you might think about whether you want to firm up the requirement to get rid of those securities or not. Sorry, John.
I was trying to. What section were you referencing?
I actually jumped forward to the performance standards B, section 8, reporting the existing town policy.
Section 8?
Yeah. Section 8, reporting, and then performance standards.
All right. So, David, this doesn't show up in your proposed standards.
Right.
Yeah, we need to have a performance reporting section in here with benchmarks linked to actually how the portfolio is being managed.
Okay, so the current finance policies include that, proposed do not. So, David, are you proposing to eliminate that?
I am open to suggestions. I think one of the concerns I have is, and I understand the chair's comments here, and I support them truthfully. But one of the comments I have is resourcing internally to be able to keep up with the policy. So that's my concern. Just being flat out honest with it.
Should be able to do that, Nick.
Pardon me?
Your investment advisor should be able to create that report for you.
Okay. Yeah, and I think they are, and they do produce quarterly reports. I think when I was looking at the current policy, and I'd have to go back and look at it again, but I think it referenced providing quarterly reports to town council, et cetera, which I'm not sure that, I don't think we're currently doing that, and I'm not sure that we, it's not that we're trying to hide anything, certainly, because we are an open book, but that's a level of intricacy that I'm not sure the town council is going to fully appreciate or necessarily enjoy. Maybe they will. Maybe they'll understand everything that's going on there and have some good feedback and comment and ideas. But I think that probably goes a little bit beyond what is necessary or what the town council needs. Again, they can request and see anything. There's no issues there, but But I do agree that the investment advisor should be able to provide that information. I don't think there's any question about that.
I mean, there's really a couple of reasons why you'd like to do it. One is pure education to people, because it's difficult unless you are a professional in the market to really understand what the market's delivering to you, whether it be fixed income, equities, or anything else. And people have a different thought about what the market should be delivering. And I bet you if you ask the average person, including people on our council, about what interest rate the town should be getting on their money, they probably don't realize that a 10-year treasury bill is 0.6%.
Right.
So there's education.
Sure.
And then number two is, how are you doing actually against how the portfolio is being managed? Are you giving something away? Are they doing an exceptional job? Are they actually earning what you're paying them to do? I mean, that's ultimately the bottom line. And it doesn't have to be and shouldn't be complex.
Yeah, I think
the financial services industry has done a wonderful job to create as much confusion as possible about how money is managed. So you got to stay away from that. You know, just keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah, I think certainly. I think from my standpoint, my benchmark is how does it compare with the LGIP return? And, you know, if we're doing better than the state treasurer, if we're doing better than the county pool, then to me those are, you know, then that's probably, we're probably doing okay.
Yeah, those are nice, simple benchmarks.
Sure, right. Does that make sense?
Yep, absolutely.
Does your advisor track those type of benchmarks and suggest dropping this investment and doing this investment and so forth?
Commissioner Mason, I think I missed that question. Can you repeat it?
Does your investment advisor, does that company or person, do they track benchmarks and things like that and suggest things of maybe we get out of this and we go into that? And don't they do that as part of the service to you?
They ought to, but I have not had those discussions with them yet. So I've been here 5.5 months or whatever it's been, and I've yet to have that discussion with them. Really, the only discussion I've had was that the quarterly update that they performed for us, I believe in middle to late July, if I'm not mistaken. So, which was just kind of reviewing and then kind of looking forward, giving us a market update, et cetera, and kind of setting a stage for what to expect moving forward.
Mr. Chair, if I may just very briefly jump in, I think all of the comments that you're making are certainly very reasonable in terms of what we ought to be taking a look at. But again, I do want to hone back in on asking you to separate the difference between what really is policy, which is what are the types of investments that the town should and shouldn't get involved in, versus the job of the chief financial officer, which is then to evaluate how we're doing. So I think we're getting into what is more a procedure, the how, as opposed to the what. And I, you know, there, because things could change. Dave may want to add other benchmarks. And the moment that it's in policy, it means that there's no flexibility in that. So, you know, the outcome is we want safe investments, and we want them, you know, made in such a way as to protect our town residents, our voters, and our taxpayers. That is absolutely the case, and that's the fiduciary responsibility. And the rest is kind of the how, you know. So my two cents, Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Well, I appreciate that. And benchmarks have to be flexible. You know, you don't set a benchmark as a fixed rate return, as an example. because it's going to vary based on what those securities are delivering to you at the time. It's just that I think that within the policy, you should be able to create benchmark to be able to determine how well you're doing. That's all. And keep it simple. Those are my only comments, Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I took a lot of notes, and I'll see. We'll see how I do in incorporating all of these, but very good feedback. I certainly do appreciate it.
Anybody else have any comments on the investment section? Okay, keep rolling.
All right, so this last section this evening that we'll tackle is with capital expenditures and improvements. So just some standard definitions there of what a capital asset is, what a capital project is, what a minor asset is, and then what our CIP is, what qualifies for a CIP project. And then getting into the policy, we deal with capital improvements. Again, this is kind of a standard overview of all capital items, both projects and expenditures. Some detail underneath that in 1.1, capital assets and capital projects, and then CIP prioritization in 1.4, minimum funding level in 1.5. So we talk about the minimum of 5% of the estimated excise tax revenues to fund capital needs. That's where that's coming from. 1.6, dealing with the financing aspect of it, that that we'll use pay as you go or debt financing, although if we incur debt for capital, that we'll rely upon our debt policy statements, which you haven't seen yet. And then the audits or review of capital stuff, that the finance department's responsible for verifying existence, doing, if there are any irregularities, where those get reported to, how often we will strive to maintain, do a complete capital inventory. So again, kind of a quick flyby of what's included in this policy. Questions, comments, feedback on capital expenditures and improvements.
Just one comment on 1.5, we seem to use excise tax and sales tax kind of interchangeably, depending on what, if you're talking about debt, it becomes excise tax, and if we're talking about general revenues or sales tax, so maybe we should either provide some definition there or some clarity on that.
Okay.
I guess one question I have on that, you know, a lot of your debt financing is done through excise tax, which is sales tax, if I'm understanding that right. Does that also include sales tax you receive from the state, or is it just the city generated sales tax?
Sorry, let me make some notes here before I... Can you repeat the question, Commissioner Mason?
I guess when you get in, we get into the debt policy, you know, a lot of your debt is based on excise tax.
Yeah.
So is that based on the tax, sales tax that the city generates, or would that also include the sales tax that the state gives?
Yeah, no, I believe it's all of it. I don't think it's just city specific. I'd have to check that with our advisor there, Mark Reeder at Stiefel. I could ask him, but I believe it's the entire, but I could be wrong. I may be mistaken about that. That's a good question.
I just think we have a definition on what.
Yeah.
Just to clarify excise tax and sales tax and so forth.
Yeah, I got that piece. That will be clarified. Thank you. It's a good comment.
On that same section, David, how did the 5% come about?
Wendy? truthfully, Chair, I don't really know. Wendy may have some background and history on this. I don't know. This is
the 5% for CA for capital?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was actually a policy recommendation that I made to council several years ago. And the whole point behind it is to ensure that when there is, and there always will be, a downturn, and what's the first thing that goes? Capital projects. And so it really was designed to be that safety net to ensure that the town always would continue to have a minimal level of capital money designated for those necessary projects that we need in order to repair and maintain our assets. So that's the reason why. And, you know, I think that we've always spent, lately we've spent more than that by a pretty fair piece, but it'll give us what I'll call kind of a, you know, the floor on those things so that we know that we have to make that commitment. You know, the way that I kind of explain it is if our revenues go down, then we need to go on a diet on the side of operations and on capital commensurately. And having that 5% means that you know, we can keep doing what we need to be doing.
But is that enough, Mary? I mean, how did 5% come about?
It's a minimum in order to not hamstring us. And the reason why is because we've had such a strong record of conservative forecasting, we know that we always have those excess reserves. And that was another part of the change in the policy, was that those excess reserves were then designated for capital and for the PSPR. So that all happened at the same time. Minimum in the operating that needs to go into the CIP, plus all of the excess reserves then that would need to go to those one-time things. So it was, you know, a combined. But if our revenues were to go down and we didn't have, you know, we were really tight on a particular year, at least we'd have that, you know, that minimum level. So that would mean it would be a pretty dire straits.
So, Mary, should it be specified that these funds will be accounted for in a separate capital reserve account? And use the word reserve, because is it a reserve account?
It's a special, what is it? Dave, Wendy.
It's a capital project fund.
It's a fund. It's an official fund. So it's literally transferred into a designated fund that's only used for capital. So it is already reserved.
But it's only used for capital if it's kind of like an extra.
No. We dump that money into the capital fund.
Okay.
It goes in there and then if that fund balance builds up, no problem.
Great. Okay. So yeah. every year you put 5% in.
We do.
And so it's just sitting there. It's like,
well, no, we spend it. I mean, we use that to budget for capital.
Okay.
What it's saying is we have to budget. I mean, maybe one year we don't need the whole 5% because we have other revenue, you know, whatever. But we use that as part of our capital budget. And we also use that as part of our capital projections for our five-year forecast.
So it's a safety net for capital.
It is a safety net for capital. That's okay. Correct.
David, quick question for you on the definition of capital asset. How is the $5,000? My reaction to that was it sounds pretty small.
Yeah, that's a good question, Chair Beasley. And you'll find the larger the organization, the larger that number is. I believe Pima County, just to give you a sense, I believe they use $50,000. I may be wrong. I may be off on that, but that's what I believe. I believe they use $50,000. But yeah, it's. I think for the size of town, I mean, 5,000 has kind of been more or less a standard for ever since GASB 34 back in, this is going way back to the early 2000s when it was passed, 2002, 2003, that standard that GASB passed where they forced local governments to capitalize all of their major equipment and infrastructure. So that, you know, I think when that standard was passed by, and so 5,000, as I was an auditor at that period of time, during that season, that kind of became the standard for cities and towns, especially smaller to mid-size cities and towns, because it allowed us to drop off, allowed those cities and towns to drop off a lot of the consumable computers and things that don't quite meet $5,000 and you know, and truthfully, they just they don't last that long because technology just kind of keeps churning along so quickly. They become obsolete so quickly that that allowed, you know, it just kind of provided, you know, kind of a minimum level that we were capitalizing stuff that could be material. We're, capturing the bulk of it that would have a significant or could have a significant impact on how our financial statements looked, specifically our balance sheet. And so that kind of became the standard. Does it need to increase? I think, you know, I'm open to increasing it. I think we could go up to 10,000. I don't think we'd have any issue with that. I think that the issue is, again, you have kind of have to look at, you know, if we go up to 10,000, what, you know, if we look at all of the assets of the city or of the town, you know, what are we capturing stuff that is material for the financial statements? Or are we leaving something that could be material? Are we leaving something out that could have a material impact on how we report our financial statements? And so, you know, obviously things from 1,000 to 5,000, those are a lot of the inventoriable type of items where we will still track it, but we won't depreciate it. And I think that's pretty standard, you know, but so I guess that's the question. I haven't been here long enough to really perform that analysis to see, okay, what number of assets that we have that are, you know, 10,000 or more, are we capturing 95% of our asset value that could be capital or 90% or, you know, I think that's really the question is in that 5 or 10% or whatever. And of course, those are just, I'm just throwing those out there to give you a sense. Would those be considered material to our balance sheet? If an investor or a bond rating agency were to look at our balance sheet, would they say, well, you're not capturing 10% of your assets, so you're misstating your assets, and that's a material amount. And so, and it's not even those agencies that I'm concerned about. It's more our auditors, because they have to opine on this even before it gets to those agencies. So I think that's a discussion worth having with our auditors. They've got it, you know, they're sticking their neck out there saying that our financial statements are materially correct, that there's no material misstatement to them. And so, and they, you know, they have their formulas with how they determine what material is. So, and they don't share those with us, the client, but that's worth having that discussion and doing that analysis.
Because, you know, with $100 million plus budget, start looking at $5,000 pieces, why do all that extra accounting if you don't have to?
Right. Right. And it is a lot to, I mean, Aaron, our senior accountant, that's one of his roles and responsibilities is to actually capture those assets and make sure that they're depreciated and so forth. And so it is a lot of work to make sure that at year end that we've captured all capital purchases, that we've loaded them in our asset software, that they're depreciated, et cetera. So, yeah, I mean, to the extent that we can, increase it a little bit. Again, I am open to that. It just becomes a matter of whether that is causing us to leave something that's material off, which we would still capture it. It just wouldn't be depreciated. But
it would be a process that you'd probably want to schedule out, because it takes a lot of analysis and there's some accounting issues you got to deal with. That's all easy to do. It's just time consuming. But the 5,000 has always been kind of a standard. If you want to go higher, you can go higher. It's just a matter of going through your analysis process and doing all the reporting requirements that required. And you usually will coordinate with the auditor so they can review it in advance and save you some hardship down the road. So it's something that's doable, but you just want to give yourself enough time to go through all the steps to do that.
Yeah, Commissioner Mason, you're absolutely correct. I know we did this at my prior employer. We increased our capitalization threshold to 5,000. But as part of that process, so there's a couple different ways that you can do this, right? Because if you capitalized a lot of, you know, just to give you a sense of this, if you capitalize, say we wanted to take our capitalization threshold up to $10,000. One option is, well, we could write off everything that's less than $10,000. But that would require, you know, a pretty large one-year expense, which is kind of going to skew how you report things at year end for that 1 year where you're taking that write-off. Another option, which is an option that we utilize after having some discussion with our auditors at my former employer, was we chose to allow those assets that were less than the increase, so in this case, the things that were less than $10,000, we chose to allow those assets to continue to depreciate. And then once they were fully depreciated and had a net book value of zero, then we would write them off our books and get rid of them and dispose of them. So again, but that way we could kind of keep our expenditures, not show this huge hit in any 1 year. We could kind of keep our expenditures trending in a certain way, because depreciation, you know, again, using straight line, it's just going to, you know, depreciate the same amount year over year. We wouldn't take that hit all in year one. We could take it over multiple years until all those assets were eventually fully depreciated. So there's different ways to do this, but obviously, my perspective, we just want to make sure that whatever we do, we're in full communication with our auditors, that they're in agreement, that they have an understanding and an awareness of what's going on and why.
Well, I guess we'll leave it up to you to decide whether we should look at something bigger or not.
Yeah, I think this discussion, let's have our auditors come in and let me have that discussion with them first before we revisit this one.
Anybody have any other questions or comments for David on capital expenditures and improvements?
No, sir.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, members of the commission, but not least, we need to kind of take a look at our revenue policies. This is in our current policies, Section B, and we've got, four specific policies. We've got revenue diversification as a section, fees and charges as a section, use of one-time revenues as a section, and use of unpredictable revenues as a section. As we look at revenues for the town or revenue policies for the town, is there any feedback that you have, or do you want me just to dive in and bring a draft back to you at the next BFC meeting?
We probably should go into a little bit. I think I sent you something for fees and charges and how you calculate the fees, and some you might want to have full cost, some you don't.
Yeah.
And, what your policy is on doing that sort of thing. I think that needs to be added to the fees and charges portion of it anyway.
Okay, I agree. That's a good comment. Thank
is,
you.
Is grants in there too?
Well, grants you could probably do as a separate policy itself if you wanted to.
Yeah. Members of the commission, I was planning on having a separate policy, which we don't currently have for the town, which deals with grants specifically, because that is definitely necessary.
David, let me ask you this question. Under fees and charges, it says here that cost recovery rates will be evaluated annually. Is that actually occurring? Is that something that should or can occur? Is that just a best practice? I don't know. I think they did do that this past year, but I'm not, I don't, they being, of course, the council.
Yeah, and Vice Chair Latchford, members of the commission, those are all good questions. I can tell you, I don't know whether that's being done. I can tell you it is best practice. I don't know. I don't have a good answer. Maybe Wendy could chime in or Mary. I don't have a good answer for that one. But those studies do take time. They are resource intensive. They don't, obviously, these, you know, doing whether you're getting full cost recovery and need to increase your fees or not, that's, you know, those things don't happen in a vacuum. And in a lot of times, especially as it relates to impact fees, we have consultants that perform that analysis for us on behalf of the town. So that's not necessarily it does take time to kind of manage the consultants and assist them through the process. Obviously, feeding them the information and the inputs that they need to make those calculations. But as it relates to other types of fees and charges that the town has, park, fees, swimming pool fees or whatever else that may not be done by a consultant, may be done internally, those can be resource intensive calculations. So
okay. I'll just jump in real quickly. So there are some separate policy statements, documents, actions on the part of the council, for example, we may have brought this to the Budget and Finance Commission previously. Parks and Recreation Commission has a pyramid model in terms of it is a guideline that is designed to give guidance to the Parks and Recreation Department in setting fees. And so again, kind of thinking about what is the overall policy objective in the financials, not in the, each of the departments may have different policies in terms of that policy structure. So I'm not sure that it necessarily belongs in this particular place. Another area is our cost recovery. We follow what the general plan says as well. The community, as an example, voted that new development pays for itself. And so, that already, the policy direction in terms of how we make those calculations. But I agree with Dave. These studies do take a lot of time to determine, okay, what is 100% cost recovery or new development paying for itself? And so they don't happen all that frequently until we start seeing that they're, a little out of whack. But what it also needs to take into account is what are our compadres in the region doing? Because, we could maybe do our math and say, hey, full cost recovery is 25% higher than what Marana, Tucson, and Sahuarita are doing. And that's probably not where we want to be. So some of those, some of those you look at and say, okay, what's the standard in the region? We want to be, kind of in that ballpark. And then do we get a lot of value added for it to, decide to make some of those changes? We have a lot of different fees and charges. We just do. And we've got we have to, I should say, pick our battles in terms of what when we have the time and the energy, and when it's going to pay off. If it's not a huge revenue source, as an example, spending a lot of time analyzing whether or not something should go up by $20, it's probably not going to be worth our time, you know? So a lot going into that. And maybe I can work with Dave on some sort of a policy statement for this section. I'd be happy to do that. Or it could also potentially be one of the guiding principles that maybe could go at the beginning of that whole, of this whole set of financial policies that gets at some of the things, you know, regarding employees that Dave mentioned earlier. So if you'll give us a little bit of time, I'll be happy to work with Dave, and we'll have at your next meeting maybe some additional suggestions and recommendations. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So what does everybody think? Could we get section B and C? I guess D, financial reporting policies, sent to us as maybe you're doing some modifications, David, for our next meeting?
Sure, Mr. Chair.
And potentially some updates on your edits to what we've done today?
I heard you correctly, and I will do my best, but you would like a draft of B, C, and D for the next meeting?
So C is expenditure.
That's probably an awful lot, because debt capacity, your debt could be, what are you able to do, I guess would be the question.
Want to do
revenue, and because expenditures and debt are going to be pretty, could be sizable depending on what you put in them.
Members of the committee, I'm going to do my best to plow through as much of this as I possibly can. No promises.
What makes the most sense in terms of a calendar going forward to chip away at this thing? Just focusing on B next time, or what? I mean, what's everybody thinking?
I think you're going to have to do more than that, Jim. If we're going to stay on track with the timeline.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Maybe throw in revenue and expenditures, and if you feel like you can do debt or even a start on it, that would be fine.
Yeah.
And I know you're busy guys.
Yeah, there's a lot there. And if we review what David's, he's going to update, so that'll be review also.
Yep. There's plenty of work.
Will that keep you out of trouble for a while, Dave?
Keep me out of something.
Came up with this schedule.
Like I said, I will commit to plowing through as much of this as I possibly can. Revenues and expenditures. I think we did hit some of C. If you look in C.2, it's the capital improvement program. I really combined that with the capital policy that we reviewed this evening. So some of this, it looks daunting to me right now, but it's probably not as daunting as I'm making it out to be. I think debt and fund balance actually should go fairly quickly. We'll see what we can come up with.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Well, I think we made some good progress tonight, just my personal opinion.
I would second that.
Yep.
Okay. Any other questions for David in this issue right now? Okay. We have a council liaison report this evening.
Yep, I'm here. Sorry, I didn't meet the first hour or so because I was at work, unfortunately. But so we have the meeting next week. We have a review and discussion of town financial and budgetary policy. So obviously, the stuff you're dealing with tonight. And other than that, it's a very light agenda session. The next session, our last session was an executive session, so I can't really talk about that. But do you guys have any questions for me? Oh, okay. Yeah, that's all I have for you guys.
Thank you, Josh.
Thanks, Shane.
How about future agenda items? We have anything here? I think our plates are pretty full here. But
policy, 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 policy.
Yep, yep, yep. Particularly if we're going to hit a December deadline. So.
Yeah, commissioners, I'll just, you know, one last kind of editorial comment here. And I've thanked you before for the time and effort that you're putting into this because it is really important. But you know, it's just to be very clear about the importance of these policies, I really view financial policies as boundaries. And boundaries, my pastor says this, boundaries, you put them in a safe area to keep you out of an unsafe area. And typically, a lot of these policies, I mean, certainly some of them will utilize year after year, but some of them maybe not, candidly. But it's for those periods where you go through severe financial distress, those challenging periods of time like we had about 10 years ago with the Great Recession. Of course, we didn't know where COVID was going to take us and so forth. These policies really provide boundaries for the town to keep us out of unsafe areas financially. And so again, I just can't emphasize enough how important this work is. It is really excellent work. The feedback this evening and even prior has been excellent. So I just wanna thank all of you from the bottom of my heart for the time and effort, because it's hard work. It's hard work going through these policies, thinking about what's missing, how they can be augmented, what could go wrong, and how we would protect against those challenges. And so again, thank you for that. And with that, I'll shut up because I've done enough talking tonight.
Okay. All right. Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
I move we adjourn the meeting.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay. Thank you very much, everybody. I think we made some real progress this evening.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Take care of yourself.
I agree.
Stay healthy, everybody.